Alrighty, welcome back. Episode 25 of the On The Bounce show. And with that comes the end of the international rugby season. Well, okay, Ireland is still going to be beating Australia, but let's not worry about that. End of the rugby season means the Springboks end where they belong, the greatest in all of rugby. And World Rugby even did the really nice thing of awarding Peter Steps-Tatoi, a Springbok, as the greatest rugby player on earth. Now, there was no surprise. I mean, for all you Keelan Doris fans, he's a great guy. He'll get there one year. Ibben probably could have won it. Chesson probably could have won it. But Peter Steps-Tatoi was basically man of the match all the time. You could probably actually trademark Peter Steps-Tatoi man of the match. It's long, but it would work. You know, World Rugby even went as far as to put 7 Springboks in their dream team. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is uncalled for, unheard of. It's just really, really amazing. But then they had to cap it there.
Yep.
They couldn't get ahead of themselves. They had to cap it there. So, as you would expect, Rassie Erasmus is the greatest rugby coach of all time in many ways. Definitely the greatest one right now. So what did World Rugby do? They kind of eased it back a little bit and gave it to a guy called, and I will check my notes, Jerome Durrett.
Imagine.
Just put more of a French accent on that and you got it. No disrespect to Jerome over here, but he's a sevens coach. Not even probably the best sevens coach. The best sevens coaches have probably been like Gordon Titchens back in the day. And maybe on their accolades, could they supersede a 15s legend like Rassie Erasmus? It just makes no real sense, really. Like, the Soak, during the season, he led France to 1 title out of the 7 in the series. Granted, they won that world that something something in Madrid. And yes, I know they won the Olympic gold. But, you know, that's not really part of the 7 series. It's like a very much a secondary kind of thing. So he got 1 out of 7 wins. They were the 5th best team on the points table. Mm-hmm. But this Oak, coach of the year. I mean, look, none of this really matches in the greater scheme of things. But World Rugby have now snubbed Jacques Nienaber after winning the Rugby World Cup. They gave it to an English guy, who led Ireland to a quarterfinal. Mm-hmm. And now Rusty gets snubbed for the 5th best sevens coach. It's all quite laughable, but again, like I said, it doesn't bother any of us. The results and the accolades, it all speaks for itself. South Africa is the greatest rugby nation in the whole world. And today's guest brings us to like another aspect about why we are the world's best. Because like you, I've been watching every single Saturday, whether it's in a bar with mates or at home. The production on SuperSport is the greatest. The punditry, the insights, the people who get together, the hiss, everything about it's just world class. So today's guest is Obani Bobo, a guy I've known for many, many years. Woo-hoo! And he is part of that.
Yeah.
He is part of the punditry and someone who obviously was an ex-player who's now bringing it into the broadcast space. Obani, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, what a pleasure.
It is, Ben. Wonderful to have you here on the couch.
It's a pleasure. I love how we South Africans hate losing and we love winning. You know what? One thing Hugh Bladen once told me, he said, you know what? He doesn't mind a sore loser. He hates a happy winner.
Yeah.
And South Africans are a bunch of happy winners.
Yeah. Yes. And we really are. But we've got so much to be happy about. Sandile, the weekend?
Pumping. Electric.
You have a good time.
Yes.
Man United didn't win, but they started so well.
Look, Ben, I know we got to get into it. But, you know, the system's coming together. You know, there's an energy about it. I'm okay with the point.
Has that been said in Portuguese yet?
No, it has not.
Such a cop-out.
No, it has not.
It's such a cop-out.
But, look, we'll take it. Okay. We've got to.
No, you will take it, and that's a great way to start. Obviously, you want to start the show, you know, every week now, the last couple of weeks, we've had the Clip Drift That's Gold competition where we encourage you to share your That's Gold moments from the weekend. This past weekend was an absolute cracker. I mean, obviously, I just mentioned Man United because I know it's a rebuilding phase and you're going to be very happy with this. But this last weekend, I mean, obviously, we had the Box winning.
Yeah.
They're always going to win, but it's just like the cherry on the top of the weekend. India hammering Australia.
After getting rolled
in the first innings.
Yep.
Magezi beating Sundowns.
That's got to be the big one.
That's the big one, huh?
Give some energy there.
Yeah, that one. Guys, we all said Sundowns were going to smack Magezi. And Magezi just did what, you know, we all love sports to do. A true underdog story.
The betting companies must have loved that.
And it's like,
it must have been a
It must have been so big because it's the cup final. So it's not like some midweek game where Sundowns might have put a few youngsters out there.
Yeah,
it was a trophy game.
Put legit dice.
Big pot.
Big pots. So that was a huge That's Gold moment. Max Verstappen, 4th title, F1.
Yeah, he's he's pushing for all time now. Now he's
yeah. No, look, Red Bull are going to obviously get over the speed bumps they had, and I think he'll go back even stronger next year. Yeah. One of my funniest parts from that race, though, was when Carlos Sainz decided not to give any shits whatsoever and to Charles Leclerc.
And just pushed.
And one of the best moments was when on the team radio they said, no, we've asked Carlos not to overtake.
Yeah,
and Carlos then he says, did you tell him in Spanish?
I love Carlos. Carlos went for it. I felt for him, yeah.
I feel so sorry for him because Carlos isn't a good cop. He's going to Williams next year.
So this was it.
This is it. Yeah, so this is he it. Will take every moment in the red car when he gets
it. He's like, I'm going to be fighting for my life now.
Speaking of red dominance, Arsenal, back at it.
Okay, let me let you have your moment. I've been on you for a couple of weeks. Okay, congrats. Bukayo Saka played absolutely incredibly. Whatever.
But it wasn't just in the Premier League. I mean, Arsenal were the sneaky little 5-1 against Sporting last night. Tuesday,
so you want winds of change? Is that what you are?
No, I'm just saying. These are all these that's gold moments for me in the last week.
Okay, cool.
So, we always share these in our own little groups on WhatsApp, of course, and we bring it out here. So, for people who did share it on social media and they were entering into our competition, we have a case of Clipdrift and Cola to give away. Mm. And this week's winner, Wandy, if you can just please bring our winner up on the screen here. Big moment for Mr. Maps 31 because, I mean, he put it perfectly. Yeah. I guess he humbling Sundowns. That was the That's Gold moment from this week.
Yeah.
So, well done, Mark. You win yourself a case of the Clipdrift and Cola, which is obviously great for this time of year. Mm. That's a little summer gift right from the top. So, we're going to get into Barney's, I wouldn't say life and career because I want to be so definite. It's just great to have him in studio because... I've known him for quite a while. I haven't seen you in... I was trying to work it back.
Yeah. And my kids have been like our barometer in terms of how far or...
Basically, your kids are 6 and 3.
6 and 3.
And
I think the last time I saw you was at Royal East.
But that was just a random...
Random golf day.
I'd sliced it onto your hole. I was passing through. And you're like, hey, what are you doing here? I was like, badly, as you can see. But we haven't had a long conversation... Because your kids are 6 and 3. I've never had a conversation about kids before with you.
Yeah.
That's how long it's been.
That is actually the interesting bit. It comes with, my boy, first of all, it's the hardest thing is raising your own self. Mm. Like seeing yourself in your child and thinking about the stuff that you used to be challenged about. And that's what I've realized with my son.
Mm-hmm.
Is all of those things that I had, those fears and now I've got a chance to almost right those wrongs for him.
Nice.
And sort of give him a bit of a chance and opportunity so that he can overcome them.
Yeah.
Because I've been through it. Yeah. And they become the reflection of who we were in that age group at that time. So having to be such a present dad. And then I've got my daughter who is like the most confident person I've ever met. Because every time she comes into the house, she announces herself. Honor is here, everyone. Yes. So just get to know that.
Yeah.
And she calls all her teachers at daycare by name, which I thought, okay, this is
crazy.
This is standing your ground. So, it's been a pleasure.
Are we on a Project Mbappe, Project Serena tip yet?
Talking about it, my son is...
we got to do it.
He loves F1 racing. Okay. He wants to be a race driver. Guess it, Lewis Hamilton is his favorite, and he can't wait for him to go to Ferrari next year. And he's constantly updating me about F1. So he sits around and he actually sits there. He's like, "Oh, Leclerc is doing this, Carlos Sainz." I'm sitting back. I'm like, "You six?
Yeah.
How do you know this?"
It's not the easiest sport for a kid to follow.
Exactly.
And then the other time, he had a Ferrari sort of like toy car that was bought by his uncle a few years ago, and now it's become quite important. And he's like, "Daddy, do you know who used to drive this car?" So I'm like, "Who?" He's like, "Michael Schumacher." Mm. I'm like, "You've never even seen clips on YouTube of Michael Schumacher." So he is that obsessed about it, which I love because I think sport is probably the greatest distraction.
Yeah,
it is, and it's a healthy one. Yeah. And as this show shows every week, it's on tap, right?
Yep.
It's endless what we can do with that.
Yeah. I love that.
So in the second part, we're going to get into obviously more of this other than just being a doting and present and happy good dad.
Yes.
We got a lot of catching up to do, but as well, like I want to chat to you about, there's obviously different stages people know you about. And this current stage I think is pretty exciting because you're very involved with the podcast I think every ex-player now is basically spending half the time with their family and half the time on podcasts. Or I think it was, in Scott Berger's case, 20%, 80%. Yeah. So I definitely want to chat to you about that, like yeah. the sort of what happens on game day and how you guys get into all those kind of things. Sure. And then Sandile will obviously ask you unrelated questions about schooling and basically...
Apparently that's my angle. Okay, cool. That's my USP. Thank you, brother.
Anyway, of course he's not. I mean, he's dressed for the occasion today. So we'll take a little break. Catch you right back after this.
Is Formula One the world's most environmentally friendly sport? Welcome to Formula 101. I'm Dimitri, and today we're chatting about F1's alternative tire allocation, or ATA rule. The ATA rule offers teams fewer sets of tires over an entire race weekend to reduce environmental impact. It also adds an intriguing strategic layer by requiring teams to manage tire wear carefully during practice, qualifying, and the race. Qualifying must see a mix of hard, medium, and soft compounds, demanding adaptability and precision. This rule tests teams and drivers' skill in optimizing tire life while maintaining performance. It also saves the pandas. Further proof that Formula One isn't just driving around in circles, it's actually bloody technical and pretty cool. So if you want to sound like you know what the f*** going on, tune in next time for Formula 101, brought to you proudly by Heineken 0.0.
So I'm going to jump in while there's all that awkward silence. There's always that awkward silence, and welcome back. So guys, I've been sitting in studio. These guys have been back and forth here about old school stories. We've got to know. How do you guys actually know one another? And please tell us all the intricate details that you can share with us.
So I would like to say that I wish I knew him from school days. I went to Weinberg, he went to Rondebosch, yeah. But you're 2 years older than me.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
You finished 97.
97.
But he was the go to school by rugby. Seriously, like everyone spoke about this.
Mm-hmm.
He would get to the first team field. And everyone was just watching him, like, okay, don't give him the ball. Like, oh, fuck, no, he's screwed now. Dude, he was as a flanker, he was that good in junior levels. But I got to know him pretty well. We did this really weird thing, 2014, I think yeah. It was a continental run to stop. So what this was back when I was like a C-grade celebrity blogger. And at this thing, it was, I wonder if you can just bring up the slide there. It was...
Oh, damn.
Yeah, we've got actual photographic proof here.
We actually do. That's so, Stanton Fredericks.
So that's yeah, Stanton Fredericks.
Is so, that is Stigger to us. Does,
yeah, yeah so that's Stigger Fredericks there. So the three of us got together as a team, okay? So, what we had to do this week was do like DIY challenges and all kinds of strange things. While we had a marathon runner and yeah. a cyclist, they would do stages every single day. And the point of this challenge that we were on somewhere along the line was that we scored points for every project.
Okay.
So our runner and our cyclist were the best.
Yeah.
We had Sean Micklejohn and Vanessa Hayward.
Yeah, Vanessa Hayward.
They were brilliant.
They were amazing.
They were amazing.
They scored all the points.
They scored all the points, basically. And then what we had is that we had to do tasks and things. Wendy, I think there's a picture of Pierre Spies there.
Oh my goodness.
We had to basically do all the stuff against Pierre, I own DIY Spies, and there's Jimmy Tao.
And Jimmy Tao.
You can see how interested I am in terms of how much of a beating we were getting. I was trying to get creep notes. I was trying to get creep notes because we're here actually building up these cupboards and I was checking out how they were doing it because Pierre was like, he's like a robot. He was just building things. Remember when he was carrying those 25-liter paints, running with
yes. He was so big, strong, and skilled at everything. He could make a chair out of like a twig.
Yeah.
So we went from school to school and community to community because the whole thing was that it was run to stop hunger and all these other kind of things in these areas. So we were doing a lot of good every single day. But between the three of us, Stanton, Kobani and I, we were shit at these things.
We were
objectively terrible. So we went to this, one of the funniest days, we went to this one playground. I think I've got a before picture here of what the playground kind of looked like.
Guys.
So we got there and the ground was harder than this table and we had to dig up stuff to put stuff down. I broke the pickaxe in about 10 seconds.
Ben, you know what they did? They actually just chucked rubble on top of cement and we never knew about it. And we had to...
No, guys, I don't think that's a
reason. So all of a sudden, we had to put up a jungle gym.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And so, but the other guys actually came in, Pierre.
and they said, guys, come on.
PSBs came and helped us.
Your opposite teammates.
Opposition actually got the bloody thing up.
So we always had different sort of things, different projects, okay? Yeah. So we did this. Wandy, there's another slide there where you actually see the jungle gym. So that was the before and then the after. Now, a lot of that was down to the fact that Pierre finished his project early. He just came in and built it.
He said, like, come on, boys.
We weren't even like halfway through. And then Pierre just basically rolled up his sleeves again. He's like, okay, cool, guys, I'll do this.
Yeah.
I don't remember that roof coming up.
Me either. I looked at these photos like, there was a roof.
What?
So for four days, we cruised around here.
I'll tell you the turning point, how we got to win the competition.
Yes. You guys won it afterwards.
We won at the end. And the one important point that was needed were it came from us.
It did actually.
We were actually the difference maker. We clinched the goal by painting us quicker than Jimmy and Pierre.
There was this long wall. It was like a preschool or something. It was very close. There was this huge wall. Wendy, I think there was a picture around us painting there. So there was this huge wall in this preschool.
Yep.
And as you see, it's big.
Yeah.
That's huge.
See
there?
It's huge.
Yeah.
And we painted that faster than Pierre.
At this stage, I think Jimmy was...
Yeah, he's burnt out.
We had saved an energy for the right reasons.
I see what you guys use your... I like what you guys did there.
But the whole thing is that we won. The incentive here was to win, and the winning team goes to Rio to the FIFA World Cup. So that's what we did, and we ended up in Rio. Trip.
Did you guys give Pierre at least something?
Nothing.
Not even a mention over there. I mean, Jimmy Tai, every time I see him, I remind him of how painting can win you things.
It does. I'll never.
That is crazy. PSBs, thank you. That's what I want to thank them on our behalf. Wow.
Yeah, best athlete ever.
He was. That was great. We should actually have Pierre on. I'll bring those photos back and then he'll get the PTSD. Yeah,
get his reaction.
So only like, Jesus. Yeah, so that was a really cool trip. I mean, the last time I spent time with you then was actually at the FIFA World Cup, where I think you went missing for about 2 days.
Yeah, standard, standard. Which has always been...
Explore.
I'm the kind of guy, even on tour when I was playing, if we get to a city, a town, or any other country, I'll just pack my backpack and mix it up with the locals, get to find out what's going on, pick up a few things, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Because I always felt that your sort of core talent is your passport and you want to experience things. Yeah. I don't want to go back and come back to South Africa and say, you know what, the rugby fields stay there and the grass stairs, they got bigger blades. I'm not in that about that.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm about,
it's like hotel to hotel teaches you nothing. Yeah.
You know, what is the life like? How does a local sort of get around? Mm. What do they do? Just interesting things and just finding new ways of seeing and understanding the place without having that. Because we're always lucky. We stayed in like 5-star hotels.
Yeah.
Everything was out there for you, you know. Everything was just...
Is there a favorite place that you explored?
I loved Australia. I thought I was going to move to Australia. Sydney is an amazing place.
Okay. Yeah. At least you didn't say Perth.
It's very much like South Africa in terms of people sort of react the same way. I thought the weather, climate is similar to Cape Town.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, you know, I could do this.
I
could sign up. It was 2003 and I was injured. I didn't go to that World Cup. So I took a month off. Because there's a lot of stuff going on about Camp Stalldrat, so I needed to run. So I got to Australia.
I just threw that.
Forget
that you're in that area.
This is another reason why I wanted to have a chat with you, because rugby right now is so good.
Yes.
Everything about it is just so good. But you saw some dark days.
21 years ago, this is when the Springbok side went to the World Cup with no game plan.
No, don't be so harsh. Yeah. Everyone shaved their heads.
Everyone shaved their heads. And they're in those barrels. We saw it on Cod
Lodge. You know what was the funniest bit? Because, I mean, Skulk had that iconic hair, that flowing locks, blonde locks, and I had dreadlocks. So I remember just before everyone was convinced to cut their hair, and they came to me, and I was like, nah, this isn't my religion. It's against everything, so I can't do it.
Yeah.
And then Skulk had to go zero. And it was so sad. It was interesting.
It is so sad because if you look at all the personalities, what makes the team what it is today, the multiculturalism, everyone gets a chance to be themselves. There it was like, this is
it. No, it was...
None of that.
It was so interesting. I mean, I sit back and I'm thinking to myself, the sort of game plan and the moves that we had and to the whole intricacies of what this Rassie Erasmus era is like. And I had the privilege, well, like 16 years ago when I was still at the Stormers, and Rassie was my coach, and he came with, like, we were sponsored by Dell, and we had all had these laptops. Now we could do sort of like analysis to opposition. We knew more what they were doing and how we were doing. All our game plan was like on digital, and you had to keep on your laptop open so that you can get happening. Into your work, right? Yeah. That was 16 years ago. Can you imagine what he's doing now with those players?
So he's always been an innovator in the space.
An amazing one too, because what was quite good for us was he put himself in the position. It's almost like Rassie wanted to be the coach that he wanted, and that's how you sort of perceive how
this is like your dad conversation going full circle.
Yeah, full on, right? And he went to us, like, it's simple things, like we're playing against the Chiefs and it's all these big Islanders there, and he'll suggest to the forwards and says, right, boys, in front of everyone, everything like transparent in front of everyone, boys, when one of these centers is running at you, you have to have the mentality that you are tackling a big forward, because that's exactly what it is. So, like, no one tells you that unless you, if you haven't experienced it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're going to be shaken up. Like, I mean, a Jonah Lomu is Jonah Lomu. Yes, he's got a wing, a number on his back.
Yeah.
But he is 120 kilograms and he's coming at you. So now there's no backline player running at you. Yeah. It's a 120 kilogram specimen coming at you. So it's those kind of things where he put himself in. The funniest bits was every time he says, you're having a nightmare. When you're having a nightmare, it's a galloping nightmare. He says, you know what? Somehow the ball has a tendency to find you when you're having a worse of one. The only thing you can do is slowing things down. Make a decision early. If you're going to run, you're going to run. If you're going to catch and pass, that's what you're going to do. If you make those decisions early, it makes your decision-making much more simpler. And in that way, you can build rhythm and get consistency. Not too many people can give you that. I mean, this man was doing that back then.
It's quite an amazing... Yeah, because if you look at like how you approach the game, as I said, you know, I wasn't blowing smoke up your ass about who you were as a kid.
Yeah.
It wasn't just the fact that you were athletic and strong and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You had a different brain for the game.
Yeah.
And that's something that's... must have been quite difficult for you when you had quite one-dimensional coaches. I mean, did you think that Rassie was going to be the success he was, or did you think it was like, okay, this might work for a couple of seasons, let's see how he goes?
Yeah, but so at first, I've always rated him as a player, played against Rassie, and I was the one who made the call to come to the Stormers. And he cannot believe it. He's like, what? I was like, yeah, please, can I get a chance? I just want a shot. Just give me a fair go. I just want to play rugby. And I mean, I just wanted to come back to Western Province besides that.
Yeah.
And at first, I thought it was a bit of an overkill. I thought it was information overload. I'm the kind of person, when you tell me something, I sort of grasp it at first hand. And some other players, I had to be sort of like cognizant of other players. They need pictures. They need to walk through it. They need, you know what I mean? He had the ability to keep all of those different personalities interested in the same sort of, he'll find a way to make it more interesting for me. So he'll give me more detail than maybe, let's say, a forward, where it's just like you clean that rack and then you just get up and stand here. For me, I wanted to know that if we're going to hit it up three times this way, how does a picture look like on the fourth rack? Because that's a picture that I want to deal with, because now you are more, if you're a gifted player, you got more chances to make decisions, because now you can go into your skill set. And even at school, we used to come up with our game plans, and we used to steal all the Brumbies moves and we're just running back against all the schools, and they never knew nothing about it.
Which was already two steps ahead of the game.
We're sitting back and we're going, oh, that worked. Do you see what Georgie did there? Okay, we're doing it this weekend. No one knows, because I had my mates we used to play with, and one was a scrum off, one was a fullback. And we used to just speak close and you just break blind and no one knew about it. It was the best. That's even crazy. The coach is like, it's a great move.
So
I didn't coach you that.
You guys got some sort of telepathy or something.
What are you guys doing off the practice, actually? Yeah.
No, just for context, you know, you said like you went down to Cape Town. There's quite a disparaging paragraph about you on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know when last you actually saw your Wikipedia profile.
Which one is that? Is that? I mean, I've never really, because I know it was not me who wrote it. So I never sort of took into it.
Yeah, what was I'm sure we got it here somewhere. Wendy, there's a slide here on the Wikipedia thing here. Yeah. Bobo has been named in Rudolf Strodi's squad for the 2003 World Cup. Okay, so we just went through that. But a torn anterior cruciate ligament in a warm-up encounter put paid to his chances of selection. Jake White realized Bobo's potential and tested him on the Vodacom outgoing tour in 2004. But Bobo had lost his enthusiasm and he lacked pace.
Oh, I love that guy. I wonder who it is.
Who wrote that?
It is. So the funniest bit, I stopped playing.
I mean, obviously, Rusty didn't write that because he allowed you to come to the Stormers.
No, I mean, I thought you'd have written something else. I was in the mountains. So after this whole schoolboy rugby career, I mean, I won't lie, I felt it, the hype. And even at school, like, the teachers were treating me differently. Mm. People around were treating me differently. Mm. And for me, somehow, it felt like a burden. And I was like, I don't want to be known as a jock.
Mm.
You know, like, the one thing that comes across is...
I'm still fighting that.
The one thing that comes across is that you got no brains, you can't express yourself, you don't know anything besides a rugby ball.
Mm.
And I decided to stop playing rugby. I became a wrestler. And I wanted to find out who I was without this game, without these sort of opinions about me. I needed to find it out for my own self.
Yeah.
And I did find out that I was a person of grit. I was a person of integrity. I was loyal to my friends and I wanted to work as hard as anything. And I was obsessive about whatever I wanted to get myself into. Mm. So with that, I always had that drive of trying to go for the next thing. At 32, I remember I was playing for Newcastle and Gosforth. I was staying there in the house and I was sitting there thinking to myself, I can't be chasing another contract. I'm 32 years old. I must give myself enough time that at 40, I'll really know what I'm going to be doing for the rest of my life, or at least carving your way to getting a career after rugby, because it is the inevitable.
Yeah.
It is going to stop. There's young players coming in, year out. I didn't want to be told or forced to stop playing.
Yeah.
And I had no injuries. I stopped rugby, and I mean, I had two knee reconstructions, shoulder reconstruction twice, but when I walked off, it was not because of the injuries. I wanted to keep that health so that I can have the energy now.
Oof.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know.
So whoever that guy is, good on you.
Look, I think a lot of people, it's maybe it was Brendan Nell, maybe you pissed him off along the line somewhere. No, obviously it's not Brendan. You know, it's just an important thing because it's so hard to say no, because it's the highest thing. You define your everything about your being is about what you do on the field.
Yeah.
And the next step is so unknown. I mean, like, we had Brian Abanner in the show, massive name drop. We had Brian, I think it was show number three. BH was here early, and, you know, he spoke a lot about that because there was a guy as well. And even if you're not a guy who believes your hype, your world, you're very big in your own world.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Sandile and I, like, we're big in the studio for an hour a week. But outside of that, we're fighting with
Gary Cliff, I'm just saying.
that is incredibly cool. So, something else I've never chatted to you about is being a novelist, writing a book. You know, when you said about how you realize you got grit and you got these kind of things, you've also got an incredible imagination, which I didn't quite.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things. I think for me, like, how I saw rugby and how I still see rugby, I was inspired a lot in those days by players like Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant. I think the time that I signed with Nike for the 2003 is when they signed LeBron James to the Nike deal. And I remember
Sorry, can you just bring that mic down a little bit? It's just on this one wide angle. It's just obscuring your the lecture. Sure. Sorry.
Here we go.
No, you're good.
So in 2003, we went for the pre-World Cup, like, taking photos and doing this all this fancy stuff. And I remember talking about creativity. We got into the studio. It was like on the outskirts of London. And there was a trampoline and there was someone on it with a soccer ball and he was just doing all these tricks and the samba music was going bananas. And it was Roberto Carlos, the stuff he was doing on the trampoline.
Wow.
My goodness. And I was sitting back and I was thinking, what can we do for rugby?
Like that.
just nothing really. I mean, there's no tackles and it's just a trampoline by yourself. So I've always thought about different passes that I can have around the world, around my back, to throw the ball through the legs, and trying to use that basketball sort of IQ of seeing space and timing, no look away passes, Magic Johnson with the whole no showtime looks, sort of no look. And for me, that was key because that's the only way I could enjoy the game. Mm. Yes, it's fine to know your fundamentals, but I think if you add something into it just to bring some excitement, it's just different pictures. I mean, if I come in front of you and it's a 2-on-1 and all of a sudden I go into a split and I throw the ball in between my legs to my outside, you're going to stand around and thinking, like, what the hell are you doing? And that is drawing and passing.
Yeah.
And that's it. It's just like distracting the mind. And then when it came to writing a novel, this gent came about, Jack, and we sit and he had this story and he wanted to know, how do we get this story across, a rugby story without having to write my story? Mm-hmm. Something for me, it resonated with me because I remember trying to get a set work book at school and there was nothing in rugby that I could just, regurgitate later on.
Yeah.
Which is weird considering how big rugby is in this country.
Right? Yeah, you know what I mean?
If you want to get kids to read a book,
just give him the rugby book.
I mean, that would be better than Feed Us a Cunt or whatever else they gave us.
So that was my premises of it. I was like, no, man, this would be quite cool. And I wanted to tell a story that is authentic. And yes, there's a few that sort of cross lines of what really happened on tours and even other stories that were happening during that time in rugby. Mm. And to write something that is compelling, that could grasp a young boy's sort of imagination or a girl, depending whatever who likes that. And it was trying to, like, I always try to put my skin in the game so that I can have that first-hand experience.
Yeah, so I just want to know, in terms of a little bit of your schooling, I don't want to throw it all the way back, was there something that you were passionate about outside of the rugby field, that like a drama, like a English?
I was into hip-hop.
Okay.
So we had a...
Which was the best time of hip-hop. Yeah, so
we had a hip-hop crew at Rondebosch called The Fifth Floor. So we used to do our own gigs, host our own gigs in the townships and the city clubs. Most of my mates went on. Fun fact is that we do have an album from The Fifth Floor, which we did back in the days. I've got a book and a hip-hop album. Shut up. So strange. And even to the shadow ball, the half a rugby ball that we started off, which was one of the things that I looked at it and I was like, it's a ball that ricochets against the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that for all those parents who are so busy and they can't get to be there to catch and pass with their kids, the kid can just hit the wall and catch the ball.
Yeah.
But then it's always fun to have the toy, but then it needs a sort of a manual.
Yeah.
So I did all of that manual. I wrote down the sort of coaching plans for intermediate to someone who's already playing the game and for the pro and how to up their reps. And it's one of those things I'm always more interested in, how to sort of break it down.
Yeah.
And even when you're breaking it down, how do we sort of take it to the next level? And it's always been just the push.
Does your son understand this? He's watching the wrong sport here. I mean, this dog has the gift of rugby in front of him, basically. Yeah. And he wants to go into Formula One.
Coach Philip is the best because Coach Philip coaches him for rugby kids. And every time I'm trying to tell him. So it was quite pleasing. Yesterday, actually, I went to go watch them play rugby kids.
Yeah.
And so as my son starts, he's not into the whole getting bashed up stuff. So him and his mate... Very sensitive gents. They like to hang out in the corner and just hang out.
Yeah.
Like, literally hang out. Yeah. Everyone is playing. Yeah. They're hanging out in the corner. And then and he gets excited because he's quite an athletic, sort of quite a boy. And so he held the ball and then someone knocked him. But then he hit his head on the ground and he had to take some time out. So he comes to me afterwards and says, "Daddy, did you see that?" I said, "What happened?" He said, "My head was spinning." So his head was spinning, but somehow he makes it back. So he had the courage to come back because now I thought that he sort of understood that it was not that sore.
Yeah.
You know, you can take the knock.
No.
And then he got the ball and then he decided that head down because I've been shooting him at home.
Yeah.
That when you get the ball,
lock in.
Just make sure they don't touch you. So he just went. And he's so pacey. So he ran away. And I was like, that's his mom, definitely. And then he started making tackles. But for me, what's the joy is seeing him having friends. Because, I mean, we don't understand how kids were affected by COVID. because my son could not see people's mouths, like mouths, and he could not mimic them, his speech was delayed. And now things like sports gives him the chance to interact.
Absolutely.
And help, because now it's the same language that they're all interested in. All of a sudden his confidence is got better, and now he can communicate and is feeling much more comfortable with his mates, and he's got mates, and so that's what I love, what the sport does for him, is that he gets to actually be there with his mates, and they're all in a learning curve because they're still young. They don't know the A to B when it comes to the game, so he doesn't feel like left out or left behind because they are all on the same page.
Yeah. So I need to get into this, the trade secrets, the industry stuff here, okay?
Yeah.
So like I said in the intro, I mean, SuperSport's always been the benchmark when it comes to the live game, the whole production around rugby. Now, like how big of a brief do you guys really get? Or is it about getting to studio knowing that Mots or whoever's going to be there, they're going to be like the anchors and you feed off them? Or are you physically putting in, not like Matt Pearce prep, but I mean, are you putting in solid prep for everything?
Massive. For me, it's just because I love the game, and like I mentioned, I'm very obsessive as an individual. I just want to know everything. Sometimes I even know stuff that I don't need to know, and
I mean, likewise, as so I did an idea show as well.
You know, you just going
again any avenue you want.
Just like,
got you.
What is going on? Let's go for it, you know. And because of that, I'm just staying as curious as possible. And when it comes to the game, I remember saying to someone that each preseason, the game goes further and further away from the last preseason. Each preseason is harder than last season. And then with that comes in more information. And with that comes in more strategy, more technical stuff that is being put out. There's more people are starting to divulge about how to go about things. So for us who are not playing anymore, it's important for us to be right there at the pulse of it. So I'll go to the Lions sort of training camp and just sit and watch and listen and see where they're going, you know what I mean? You can figure it out as a player or former player who's played at that level and understanding, oh, this is what they're doing. And then it's always, I think, even for the coaches, a validation when you say to them, oh, this is what you guys are trying to do. And it's like, oh, you see it. Because they themselves are trying to figure out things and seeing how they can strategize themselves. So I do a mess of research. I think you can never do enough of research, because you don't know when you're going to need that nugget. And then it helps, especially if you're well-versed in your subject, because it just makes Mots' job easy.
Yeah.
Even when you have to give an added value, you do have that to offer.
Yeah, it definitely is seen that way from a viewer's perspective. Because, I mean, again, like I know with two of us talk about our sporting things.
Yeah.
Is that we know what to look for.
Yeah.
And when you learn something, because I mean, we do quite a bit of prep for the show anyway, it's a multi-sports kind of platform.
Yeah.
But when you're watching on Saturday, you go, I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
Like that's a real pearl. And I still get that. I get a lot from you guys, I've got to say.
It's, I mean, you think about, so I look at the gents in a way that understanding the personality of someone. For instance, like Skalkberger is a kind of person who looks at things in a very methodical way, and this plus this, that makes sense, right? Nick will see it in a more holistical approach where these are what is required to win a test match. I'm looking at it in a way like, what is it that no one else is seeing on what is good about what they do? Because we have a tendency in South Africa, when we're doing well, is to nitpick.
Yeah.
And sometimes we miss out on things like what is good, because I think education of the game and showing people how to look at the game in a different perspective, it works, because in that way you grow the sort of audience and the people that watch it, because it's not just the technical bits, but it's somehow, it could be just how the guy's ethos is, and that's what makes him great. For me, comes an example of Frans Malherbe. He's named in the starting lineup, and then he goes to Rassi and he says, Rassi, you missed one here. Vincent Koch is on his 49th test match. Please, you can't have an 18 on his 50th jersey.
Mm.
You know what I mean? That goes bigger than knowing your game plan. that goes bigger than, you know what I mean? There's that trust, there's that care. Everyone sympathizes and empathizes with what is happening. The environment is bigger than the individual. And that, those things to me are tangible. Those things to me is what we want to build environments around. You know what I mean? Where if a coach could be in such a privileged position that you coach your side so well that you become redundant, they solve things.
Yeah.
I think that's when you'll have achieved your job.
Well, that's like a good CEO of a company, yeah, the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just talking about this whole ecosystem and how you break it down like that. The next Rugby World Cup's 2027 in Australia. We all very bullish about the fact that we can be the first team to go the three-peat. So I don't want to put you on the spot and say yes or no, but I want to put you on the spot more along the lines of just what you just said now about this greater awareness. Who do you think are the legit top four best teams come Rugby World Cup 2027?
First team that we have to
Wales,
be
Wales, really. No way.
First team that we have to be aware of is France. Because France is in the same space that we were in 2019.
You gotta go
when that team was young and they had the pressure of hosting one at home, which I think it was 4 years too soon for those players. With the IP that they've got now and what they've sort of collected as a squad and the young players that are coming through. I'm talking about the French team who has been winning the under-20 championship for the last 5 years in a row. That is the caliber that is coming through. And it's going to be Ed in that. And there's another Tuilagi who is bigger than all his uncles and an athlete of note. There is so many talented youngsters coming through, leaders. You have to understand, this group has senior players who are our legends playing with them as a senior players in France. That's the group of French players that is coming out at the moment from the top 14 because they're getting prepared by the best coaches from the Southern Hemisphere, Northern Hemisphere, whoever the French league can afford, they get.
Yeah.
Right? So which means they're getting the best out of all the resources when it comes to rugby. So, which is why I think with that intact and the way that they're tracking, I think they'll be a side to look out for. Australia will surprise everyone. Why I say Australia will surprise everyone.
You'll get verified from Sandile here.
If I was Joe Schmidt, the one thing I will do will scour and go to East Europe. I was in Georgia for the under-20s, and I just could see tight heads and loose heads, just people walking in the streets. I'm sitting there going, jeepers.
I can recruit this one.
They could go at it and get some Eastern European block players to just give him some bit of muscles, just to give him a bit of mongrel, just different mindset. And you probably, if you had to look hard enough, you probably find maybe their ancestors, some of them traveled to Australia back in the day.
Exactly.
So that to me, if they could bolster their front, their pack, their backs they do have, the rugby smarts they do have, that's what Australia is all about. Yeah. It's just finding the right fundamentals on how to win a test match. I'm going to go Ireland, but an iffy Ireland, because if they don't change where they are at the moment and players that they're bringing out and players coming into the system, I think they're too based on Leinster sort of one way of going about things. I think if they sort of strengthen Connacht, strengthen Munster and Ulster, then they can grow a bigger pool of players and quality of players.
No, New Zealand?
New Zealand will always be there. And for them, at the moment, what's beating New Zealand at the moment is just fundamentals.
Yep.
And New Zealand will rather play backwards instead of saying, you know what, if they've covered the space in front of me, there is space behind them.
Yeah.
And until they get that through their heads and not think that it's against their DNA, jeepers, we're going to be in trouble, because that's what they did in 2015. Those players, when you played against the Crusaders, you always felt you were in the game. Because they kept the ball and kicked the ball to you the whole time. And then they ran into places in the last 20. Because you've been doing all the running, but you've been running into to your halfway line.
Yeah.
And then they get the ball in your 10-meter line. They make a line break. It's a try. You've been trying to make line breaks from your own 22.
You've been actually running backwards.
You get to the halfway and you turn it over. And then you're back in trouble again. So it's those kind of things. Yeah, I think those teams for me are up there. Wales it's sad, but we would love to see a Welsh team that does well. I think Scotland they just don't have the player pool.
Yep.
Yeah, it's quite simple. I mean, you would say, like, about numbers, Ireland don't have it either, but they've got good systems in place. Mm. But Scotland are also just, like, it's just too far for them to go. They can be spirited. And this is back from the days of William Wallace. They've always been spirited, but they just haven't got the other stuff to go forward.
Oh, man. How disappointing was it for them not to score a try against Springboks? I mean, this team has been taunted as one of the better attacking teams.
Most flamboyant, and Warden, exactly.
And I mean, Gregor Townsend, what he has done.
Yeah.
And not to unlock a South African team, which no one has ever given us this sort of smart idea, call or chat or even put it next to our name.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, we can outsmart people and shut them out.
Yeah.
Well, that's the most important thing, really, because we've always got the brawn, but then other teams got the brawn as well.
Yeah.
It's like we're getting smarter, and then you always get those guys who go, oh, yeah, but the ref this, the ref that. It's like our guys adapt now in play to actually nullify any ref having a bad day.
It's the most ridiculous thing, you know. The Springboks, 50 players being used, averaging 8 changes a test match for the last 13 test matches. So with that, what I loved about it, first of all, you had 2 new coaches who were brought in to come with a different perspective to solve the same problem. Tony Brown sees it differently. But what I love about Tony, because he played in South Africa at the Sharks and at the Stormers, and luckily enough, I did play with him.
Yeah.
Tony understands the DNA of South Africa.
Mm.
So when he was playing here, what used to frustrate him the most was why we never backed our skill set, because we do have these athletes.
Mm.
But we were so quick to say, what is the easiest way out?
More.
Where are we not going to make mistakes?
Yeah.
Okay, no forward must pass. We're all going to clean in the forward. You don't pass. No overflows, none of that. Mm. So he was like, so he's encouraging Achilles Neyman. He's encouraging, no one knows this, Eben Etzebeth used to play in the centers when he was a junior.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
He does have that skill set.
Yeah.
We are starting now to enjoy and be rewarded of Damien Dialenda's skills.
Yeah.
Because he had that when he was coming through. Yeah. I mean, there was a time he and Sonny Bill were the top offloading players in Super Rugby, 2015. Yeah. And now we're getting to see that consistency of Jesse Creel being given the confidence, right? Apelele Fassi can explore and do whatever he wants. And for me, having a Jerry Flannery who comes in and says, yes, our defense is about putting pressure and defending the problem, which is the ball.
Mm.
But it doesn't mean that we have what everyone thinks is a rush defense. When you're defending the ball, the threat is the ball.
Yeah.
They can be as wide as possible, but if you have the ball and I shut that down, you are isolated and your players are way far away from you, and we're going to catch you on the behind the gain line.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden now teams don't know how we defend, because we sort of like on the read at the moment, and with the experience that these players have and the trust they have for the last 6 years being doing exactly the same thing, and even their intellectual property is up there now. They understand. They're the ones who are telling the coaches, hey, maybe we should slow it down a bit. Let's get to the conservative side of life, because I think we're a bit too trigger happier. So that's what I really enjoyed about this Springboks. Those 8 changes makes the players find ways to solve problems on the go.
Mm.
So like we have those mistakes where something that never happens against the Springboks is someone breaking us through our vacuum. Because now, for the first time, these two gents are playing with each other against an opposition, and now they have to find a mitigating stuff so that they can solve these problems. And that's what we've done well over in this past 3 games, is that these players have been thrown into these challenges, but what they have done was, let's figure it out together. The more you sort of do that to your team, because you don't want to be surprised when 2027, it's a quarterfinal, and 3 of your top players are injured.
Yeah.
Which is something that will scare the bejesus out of a lot of people, and it does happen. But we're like, okay, that just means this guy's going to do the job.
Up. Yeah, so you know how
to step up. We even saw it now on this test series, on this last tour.
Mm.
3 or 4 guys went down. It wasn't about, oh shit, he's gone down. The next story straight away was, okay, so then this guy's going to do it. Like, this is how he's
going to
do it. This is when you can bring in a fly-off to replace a prop.
Yep.
But it's just, it always makes me so happy. Like, you're talking about these things now, yeah, and I'm already thinking, shit, we like to have Bok rugby until next year. Like,
I was sitting back, Ben. Can you imagine? I'm sitting back, I'm going, Russ is playing chess and everyone else is playing drafts.
Yeah, they're playing something else.
I mean, obviously not the French Sevens coach.
He's amazing.
I mean, he's playing backgammon, all those kind of things. Jerome. My man, Jerome.
Do you think, like, you know, without having a go at who named that, do you think that coach will get the best of this dream team against, let's say, a British-Irish Lions side or a side that will be coached by Rossi? If he had the dream team, do you think he will earn the respect of those players he'll be coaching?
No, not even close.
It's easy to give the award, right?
Yeah.
But then you don't think, will these players be coached by this guy?
It's
a 15-man's award.
Mm. It's a 15-man's award. And that
no,
guy's
I'm with you on that one.
That guy's also been in the job for 7 years, huh?
And he wasn't the best even at the sevens.
They had to bring him to Paul, who played one good game in the final.
So basically, the coach of the year is actually Anton DuPont, because he decided to play sevens, and his 15-man bosses said, cool, we'll bankroll this.
We'll allow you to go do that.
Amazing.
Anyway, I don't want to keep knocking that thing, but it is pretty funny. We're going to take a small break, and then we come back with what's happening this weekend. Obviously, get more from our guest, and naturally Sandile's take on the weekend, because it's going to be super heavy on the rugby. We've got sevens rugby back on the bill here. URC is back. And then there's also a touch of football as well, because it's Liverpool versus Man City this weekend, and Man City haven't got a win in 5 games. Catch you back off the break.
Are goalkeepers the most privileged players on the pitch? Welcome to What the Footy, proudly sponsored by Heineken on the Bounce. Today, we're diving into goalkeeper ball handling. In football, the goalkeeper is the only player on the field allowed to use their hands, but only within their own penalty area. Outside that zone, they're just like any other player and need to rely on their feet. Here's a fun bit. If the goalkeeper handles the ball directly after it's been deliberately kicked to them by a teammate, it's called a back pass and results in an indirect free kick for the opposition. Additionally, a goalkeeper can only hold the ball for 6 seconds. Any longer, and it becomes a free kick for time wasting. Keepers are a strange bunch and can sometimes be ungovernable. That's why we need to police them and how they handle their balls. Anyways, that's enough innuendo and info for the day. Catch you next time.
Welcome back. It is another big sporting weekend and a huge, huge rugby weekend. Just before the break, I mentioned the Bok fixtures for 2025. The Bok fixtures for 2025 home games have been announced. We don't have the greatest opposition.
That's okay.
We've got SA versus Italy 5th of July, 12th of July Italy. So we got a test series versus Italy. Then we got Georgia for scoring practice.
Yep.
And then, obviously, Rugby Championship comes in there. We've got 2 games away in New Zealand next year, which is hugely exciting. Is that the start of that elongated series thing?
It's 2026. That's when tours are starting, which I think it's long overdue.
So much so. And that's what everyone wants more of.
We need more of that. Because can you imagine, for 6 weeks, that's going to be the narrative. Mm-hmm. That's going to be people, influx of people coming into our country. Enjoying our country.
Yeah.
We got a beautiful country. It's time for us to show it off again.
Like I said, we've got a big weekend of rugby because URC is back. Now, the URC, Leinster are top of the log because they played 6 games. They've won 6 games. Glasgow Warriors, they are second on the log. They have 4 out of 6. And then there's a bit of a gap because the SA teams have still only played 5 games to the rest 6. We're going to catch it up at some stage. Yeah. But Bulls and Lions made a great start. Sharks and Stormers not so much, especially the Stormers. They are languishing in 13th spot. But most importantly, that is the game this weekend on Saturday. Sharks, Stormers, Durban, 5 o'clock. And then Sasha Feinberg and Gomezula, he's back.
Yep.
And Mani Lebok could be in for this Saturday too. Can you imagine those two playmakers?
Are you happy with Sasha and like the layoff and the recoup time? Because it's a pretty big injury, and it wasn't his first knee injury.
He's still young. I always say that he's still young. The one thing is the much of investment that is put onto these players, I don't think it will be of best interest for the franchise to let him play too soon. which means that they will go through the right detail. He himself will want to let himself, especially after the lesson he learned, that
pushing,
playing and pushing yourself in the injury is a selfish thing, because yes, you are ambitious enough, granted, and it's that's what you want to see from a young player who wants to don the jersey, but we need you for a bigger cause, and you should let the one person who can give 100% into jump the in. Test,
especially jump in. With the depth, yeah.
You know what I mean? Depth. Especially with the depth. And another thing, it could be your last game ever because of the injury, or you could have a nightmare, and then you don't give the best representation of yourself.
Yeah.
And that is the worst part, right? And we won't care because we just want to see the numbers.
Mm.
And so I think he's a matured enough boy. I think he'll love this new challenge because he knows that he can't rest on it. Jordan had it go. Money's there. 100 Pollard, two World Cups.
Yeah.
Bank, right? And I mean, I was looking at it the other day. He has 2 golds and 1 bronze from 2015. Him and Jesse Creel.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And Eben Elizabeth.
Huh.
Oh.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
Think of that. So we've also got the sevens. You know, obviously Blitzbox came to the Olympics. They got a bronze.
Yeah.
It was unexpected. What's kind of happened with the R7s rugby, like from your standpoint?
We used to be
so good. Yeah. We used to have the academy producing talent. And then
all of a sudden it sort of
fizzled out a bit. You know, like there was no next generational stuff after. Who was our best coach was Neil.
Paul True. And then it was Paul True. Then Neil Powell took it to the next level. I was there in 2007 when they were starting the central contracting of sevens players and trying to move and having a proper sevens academy in Stellenbosch, which it is there at the Sports Science Institute that they have down there. And it was called the greatness. What is it? Pursuing greatness, the great pioneers, and the Neil Powells, the head of sevens rugby, Marius Schumann. So those players sort of at that time, at first, then you never used to get like the same privileges as the Springboks when you used to play sevens. It was almost like you were the third cousin. I've been in the sevens setup since its inception in 1999 when they started with HSBC as a youngster, and then I came back as a much more senior player, and Paul Drew, who I used to play with, was coaching. They really did magnificent in terms of identifying players and bringing them into the academy and keeping them for a few years. But then the Roscoe Speckmans of the world started popping up. The Colbys started popping up from that system.
Yeah.
And then it became like...
Gotta grab a talent.
It was almost like come through station and then cheers, right? And we haven't had the time where we have settled into a group. And it's been a while since Neil left that we have settled to a group of players that we're going to keep for a cycle. I think you have to start thinking of sevens as Olympic cycles instead of anything else.
Right.
Yes, the World Cup is a carrot, but I think a gold medal in the Olympics is huge. And once we start saying, okay, we're going to commit to a player group for those 4 years, and these are the players that's going to take us, I think that's when we're going to really set the world alight again.
Well, I guess that's the masterclass of the best rugby coach in the world, is that he identified the Olympics, old mate Jerome.
That's it.
So again, I mean, more praise for World Rugby's Coach of the Year. He identified what you've just said. And you're
giving him too much gas, I want to tell you guys.
Well, everyone knows about the Olympic. If you're an Olympian and you're a gold medalist, you can walk anywhere.
Cool. Yeah. It is pretty cool. Even though it's not the pinnacle of the sport, I agree with you. Look at those cycles.
Mm.
So if you are looking to watch that, this is what this will go for the 6th title in a row for Blitzbox.
Yeah,
they love playing in Dubai.
We love Dubai. I don't know, it's because there's so many South Africans there, and
I've been to that stadium. It's great.
And then there's the tens happening with the legends on the other side.
It's a cool event. Like you literally drive into the desert. I mean, I know it's more built up now.
Yeah.
You drive into the desert out of nowhere, you see a sign that just says the sevens. It's
there it is.
It's a lone outpost.
Amazing.
So the Blitzbox will be taking on Australia Saturday, our time, SA time, 8:50 in the morning there. And the next game will be against Kenya at 12:58. And then the Blitzbox have the honor, the honor of going against the best coach in the world. Yeah. They play France at 7:15.
Just Sunday jerseys.
Crazy.
There is obviously another test match that is happening. We mentioned at the start of the show, Ireland are taking on France at 5:10. But guys, we need to get into the big thing.
Australia.
Ireland taking on Australia.
Well, the Grand Slam, which has fizzled.
Well, they were always going to lose to Scotland and Ireland.
Yeah, no,
I mean, it's just kind of where it was. So it was great that they beat England, but then it was going to fizzle after that, after the bit of sizzle. Premier League, Sandile, you've been quite quiet this show because I've been, again, hogging the conversation.
The rugby.
No, I'm sorry, I can't help it. If you put a rugby guest down in front of me, we could do a five-hour show.
At least I jumped in. I had some.
I think Sandile has got the thing that I have in my head is that they don't pass per word.
That's crazy. That's an attack on you, Ben. Yeah, we got the Premier League back this weekend. We've got your team on the bounce back, a little bit of a bounce
back.
There they are.
They're currently fourth. They're slipstreaming their way there. Just a little innocent 9 points behind Liverpool.
They got West Ham. West Ham is also jamming, guys. I think my team is right there at the bottom.
I always put your team here just so we know.
West Ham and Arsenal hop on 7 on Saturday, guys. If you care about Arsenal, go watch them.
Damn right.
Sunday is the blockbuster day. We've got Chelsea versus Aston Villa. Chelsea have been making a real great push this season, and we've, you know, making them under the radar a lot. They're third, guys, and they've been getting some good wins. So, yeah, shout out to Chelsea. Spurs versus Fulham. Thank you, Spurs. We thank you all as a footballing community. Thank you for that work you put on Man City last week.
They did, yeah. They put hands on Man City.
I mean, look, Pep Guardiola beat up now in the Champions League. He beat himself up. So, whatever, Spurs, thank you for that. We got you that at 3:30 on Sunday. Then we've got the big game of the weekend. We've got Man United versus Everton. Sorry, I couldn't even say it with a straight face. Look, we're hoping Ruben does something.
When is Newcastle playing?
Are we
on Monday?
No, sorry, I noticed that you mentioned how your rugby career took you there.
Yeah.
Like, by association, did you watch the games or?
I did.
Did you care about football then?
It was quite interesting. At first, my English teacher at Rondebosch actually was a massive Newcastle fan, and that's how I sort of got turned around into following Newcastle. We went in the end of the year tour, and our bus pulled in the same time as the Man United bus. Mm. David Beckham was out there reading all the gossip.
The time.
One of our players saw Peter Schmeichel, and he was like, "Hey, Peter Schmeichel, is this you? Are you?" And he was like, "No shit, mate." And we were trying to get into the bus to go for autographs and signatures, and we were told to pee off. And I was like, "Come on, Newcastle!"
And that really
flipped it for me because I had affinity with the players. I mean, David Beckham, everyone loved him.
Yep.
And then there was Lee Sharp, and then there was Andy Cole, and then there was Bidzi, and then this is now Ginola, this is Newcastle, and so I get to go and play for Newcastle, coincidentally, and there was a relationship between the clubs, the football and rugby, so I mean, I went to one of the biggest night out. It's a pub hop with our name drop, so it was Taylor was still a captain, there was a number 9, Andy Carroll, and it was...
Yeah, these are real guys.
These gents used to go and play a bullion, which is worth £20,000.
Yeah.
I'm sitting back in those days, it was like 20 odd for a rand.
Yep.
I'm converting, and this guy lost 2 bullions sitting there in 2 minutes, and I'm sitting back, I'm going... I could have paid off my house.
That's your big game this weekend.
Massive.
And then the big blockbuster.
Big game.
Liverpool versus Man City. We hope Liverpool does the work on Pep Guardiola because this might be the end of Pep's reign, guys. If he goes 7-6-8 on the trot. Oh.
Do you reckon that will push him over the hill? Or he's the kind of guy who will have... that I want to prove myself again.
I think.
What do you think? What do you think?
Because of the culture of what he's built, he'll know that his players aren't hungry. That's the always his point of view is that if his players aren't winning consistently, it's either his fault or the players' fault, and it feels like they're rejecting what Pep's giving out to him. So I think we've all been waiting for balance. We want Pep to go coach a national team. We're tired of this problem. Let him go coach Spain, and then we can all move on with our lives now.
Maybe this is the best challenge he's ever going to have.
Say that.
He absolutely should have coached England. We spoke about it months ago. We said he should have held on for that thing. That was the actual storyline, and he fucked it. So I have no sympathy with him.
That is actually a brilliant. I never thought of that.
He knows England. He's been in touch with the player. That was the storyline. Yeah. And he was like, "Nah, I'm just gonna do one more year." Yeah,
nah, look at
have
that.
Thomas Tuchel. He's just as cool.
Maybe that oil money's too good.
And then in the PSL, we have Kaizer Chiefs versus Royal AM. We don't want to talk about anybody and their tax issues, but hopefully Royal AM.
<said it.
laughs> Hopefully Royal AM gets onto the field this weekend at 4:45. We've got Sundowns versus Kukune. We want to see what Sundowns are made of. You know, they had a good calf run this weekend. Little draw. But let's see what they do this weekend. They've got to react. Pirates on Sunday versus Stellenbosch. This is the game of, you know, the PSL. We're seeing how electric, you know, the Pirates players have been. And even in CAF, they've been so, you know, very great. So let's see what Pirates have got to, you know, got to do with that. My dad can't wait. Talking about the Formula One.
Well, the Formula One's down to the drivers, the Constructors' Championship. Because Max has won. Lando didn't have it to come towards the end. The Ferraris are fighting with each other. But the Constructors' Championship's still kind of thereabouts. So we're in Qatar this weekend. There's two races to go. There's Qatar and then there's Abu Dhabi. Qatar's got the sprint race. An extra couple of points on the go there. McLaren's still hot favourites to win the Constructors. They kind of deserve it. Oh, I hate using that phrase. 608. Ferrari's 584. And then, well, Max is, I mean, he's done enough.
Where the hell is Checo? We keep on asking you every week, man. Yeah. Bloody Checo Perez.
So that is it for your sporting weekend. UFC back with us into the second week of December.
Okay.
We've got the NGC. And if you are a big golf fan, of course, we have the podcast series, The Road to the NGC, presented by Sun International, where I talk to a whole bunch of interesting people. This week, Robin Williams is the guest. Next week, Mr. Gary Player is the guest. And of course, next weekend is the event itself. So I'm hugely excited about that. I'll be there next weekend. Barney, thank you so much for being here today. I feel like this has been a 5-minute conversation. Yeah. I know it's not, but you know, we try to keep the show to a tight hour, which I think we failed with it.
Yeah, no, we failed.
Thanks so much. I think it's one of those things that I really like to highlight. Like, I'm not just, again, using for the sake of a theme for a show, is that there's so many aspects of rugby which are great. And the fact that you had a great playing career, giving back so much on the super sport aspect of things, podcasting as well.
Yep.
You know, you're obviously very involved with that. And then the coaching aspects further down the line. I mean, your story is one that's ever going to evolve.
Yeah.
And it's just great to know that we've got people like you within the system, so to speak. And if you can drop by for a little chat every now and again, I mean, this is the great thing. South Africa and sport and rugby in particular, just it's so much to be excited and happy about.
And I think I'm just grateful to the ones before us who had the vision to make sure that this country could be where it is at the moment. And now it's up to us to just push it and take it further for our kids. So
damn right.
It's always a pleasure to share, to grow. And to be with such great company. Thank you for having me. And I've got a new pod coming out, Curb. It's called Keeping It Rugby with Tobani Bobo.
Mm-hmm.
With a few journalists that I'm just sitting around with, just breaking some bread. Mm. I think we sort of sometimes forget.
I hope it's not the journalist who wrote your Wikipedia.
If it is, I'll find a way to discredit them in front of people. But it's one of those things. I've always found those gentlemen quite interesting, and I remember them as a wolf pack following us around when I was still at the box, and even just playing provincial. And I get to reverse the roles, ask them the questions, because most of the time they don't get to explain their opinions that they put out in the newspapers, and we can actually get now a chance to interrogate them and dissect what they say.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. Catch us back next week. We're going to go heavy in the golf because it is the NGC, of course. But yeah, tell your friends. We've got about 4 shows left of the year, 3-4 shows.
Damn, only. Okay.
We've also got a recap show with Sandile and I, which I'm very excited about.
Yeah, the best bloopers. Let's do it.
It's not so much the bloopers. It's about how good the show's been all year. Thanks so much for joining us. Catch you back next week.
Thank you.